You're listening to Dr. Bill Cortestis and Dr. Gaurav Bahardi on It's Complicated, the podcast that uncomplicates the mental and physical aspects of life and the aesthetic surgery to help anyone committed to achieving their personal best.
So, you know, we always get asked, what can I do to enhance my results? Is there something patients can do? And on the flip side of that, I mean, we're dealing with It's Complicated, right? What can patients do to screw things up royally, which a lot falls in our hands and what we do, right?
Yeah.
In the end, like, we're obligated to do our best. But as we always mention to patients, this is a two-way street, right? I'm going to do my part. You got to do your part.
Yeah.
Because if not, you can really make something go wrong.
I think let's just go super basic. Number one, when we, as your provider, give you instructions on what to do post-op, follow those instructions.
Yeah, they're not suggestions, right?
Seriously, I mean, I you can't make some of this stuff up. I mean, sometimes it's like, did you go over those instructions with their nurse? Oh, yeah, yeah. Did you see the paper? Yeah, but, you know, I kind of just did this. And the things that people think that you can do afterwards, sometimes, at least to us, seem totally irrational. But I think we didn't obviously appreciate that we need to maybe convey things even more so. So I think when you're planning for something, be prepared to listen and follow the instructions. You have to follow the instructions. And most of them are pretty basic and actually intuitive. But number one, first and foremost, follow the instructions. Number two, if you're not sure about something or you want to do something that maybe the instructions don't say that you should do, you need to call us. Call your provider. Call a nurse.
We're never going to be upset if you call us or text us or call the online person to find out, hey, can I do this? Is it okay to go get a massage one day after a breast surgery?
The answer is no.
I've had that happen, by the way.
Oh, I mean, like, the stories are insane. You have people going, like, swimming in the ocean after a breast aug in less than a week, or people going on a big ski trip, or somebody going on a surfing or on a paddleboard and having a big accident within a week or two or a couple of days. At the end of the day, you can do most of your normal stuff, but you got to respect that your body has gone through a little bit of a trauma and needs to heal, even if you feel great. Even if you feel great, that's not an indicator that you need to go back to normal life, you know, immediately after.
But are we ever going to get mad? No. I mean, in the end, we never get upset or angry. We just said, we'll deal with it. If something happens, you start bleeding or something gets screwed up, we'll just fix it. That's just what we do.
Of course. I mean, we have to. I mean, it's just because we want our patients to have a better result than they even do. And I know that sounds kind of silly, but it's true. You know, maybe we should talk about activity. So that's a good thing. Since we're talking about people wanting to go do stuff afterwards, obviously you have to limit activity. Like, what is the right way to approach resumption of activity? You know, there's one side that says, you know, be careful, don't do anything. You need to be very cautious, but that's dangerous too, to be bedbound and not be moving in a non-ambulatory, because that's dangerous because of potential blood clots, right? So how do we break that down for our listeners? Let's just really break that down. What activity is okay? How do you resume? What do you do?
So we always ascribe to the philosophy of early active recovery. And you're like, oh my God, you guys just said don't be active. But no, active with the appropriate restrictions. And every surgical procedure we do, we're going to give you restrictions. If it's a facelift, you're not going to be really moving your neck too much or your face. You're going to be walking around like a robot. If it's breast surgery, you're not going to do a whole lot with your shoulders or your chest. It's pretty intuitive stuff, but you're still going to be up walking and doing a lot of your functioning daily activity stuff.
Yeah. And that's important, because what has to happen is we want you to preserve range of motion with the body. If you're not moving and keeping the locomotion going of kind of normal movement, walking around, using and moving the joints, you'll slowly kind of degenerate a little bit. And you'll also get stiffer in the joint above, and then you could potentially have other issues. And so actually moving is protective. Now, the thing that I always tell patients is your number one indicator to not do something is exacerbation of pain or causing pain. It's pretty remarkable. Your body is a smart structure. And if something is causing injury or trauma, it's going to hurt. so you can listen to that. In addition to that, what you want to think about is anywhere you've ever had an incision. So let's say an incision is made in your eyelid, or an incision is made in your cheek, or an incision is made in your tummy. You want to try to avoid activities that stress that incision. So like an abdominoplasty, you don't want to twist around or extend or, you know, do anything high intensity where that repair is going to be stressed. Same with like an eyelid procedure. You don't want to rub your eye. You know, when we have people come in and they'll pull out a suture and, you know, they were vigorously rubbing their eye, you know. And also, you know, you want to think about if you've had a procedure, for example, like a tummy tuck or like a thigh lift or anything that's a large surface area where you remove something. When you remove something from the body, then there's a wound surface that has to heal back down. That was for a period of time a raw surface. And what a raw surface means is that if that raw surface gets irritated or if it starts producing fluid or there's a bleed, that it can fill a space. And so that raw surface needs to heal. And that's why we don't want patients doing high intensity activity, because if you get your blood pressure high or your heart rate high, that can lead to a potential fluid development. And that's the reason why we don't want you to exercise super vigorously. It's not that you can't and won't be able to. It's that there's a chance an issue could happen after that. And so you have to make a commitment that you're going to do whatever it is so that you don't have a complication. You're trying to avoid a complication that actually is almost self-induced. So then when patients start thinking that, oh, I'm actually going to be the one to cause a complication here, maybe they'll listen a little bit more. But follow those instructions, follow that timeline, and then you're going to be able to crank it up hard. And then when in doubt, you just reach out to us and say, hey, I really feel good. Can I do a little more? And then, you know, like you were saying, Bill, then we can consider that.
I mean, you said it best. It's like, we're going to give you some instructions. We're going to give you some restrictions. Just follow those to a T. Don't go overboard and you're going to be fine. It's pretty simple.
And then when in doubt, ask. Here's a big hot topic. This is a big one because everybody asks, or they don't want to ask, but they do want to ask, is sex. When can they have sex? Just going to break it down a little bit for them. What's the big deal and when or what can they do? Probably more details is probably better for our listeners because they really need to know.
Yeah, I mean, the key here is, one, you want to get through the initial active recovery part of surgery. So you have that little window of time where you want things to heal in the short-term initial period. Once you've gone through that initial period, then it's really at the discretion of each and every patient when they feel up to it. When that is, it may be slightly different per location of the operation that we did, but I would say within 2 to 3 weeks at the earliest to, you know, a month is kind of the time period that you can resume normal activity.
Yeah. And listen, I mean, we need to go into details here, not just like, okay, activity. Like, so number one, I'd say probably 4 weeks. Like, here's the deal. When people have sex, there's probably like rigorous sex or not so rigorous, but your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure goes up. Remember what I just said a little bit ago? Like your heart rate goes up, blood pressure go up. You could potentially stir some shit up. So that's the reason you want to be careful on. Other thing is a lot of stuff that we do relates to the organs that are sensual organs, i.e. the breasts. Those breasts can't be manipulated, squeezed, hardcore fondled for several weeks. So just because someone can go work out at 4 weeks, that doesn't mean those breasts can be squeezed aggressively. Bad things can happen in those situations. So, I mean, sometimes, Bill, in those, we're like, you know, 2-3 months before, you know, a partner can aggressively manipulate breasts that have been, you know, potentially augmented and lifted or reduced because you can cause an issue. And then the other thing is kind of like, so let's say a female has a mommy makeover and, you know, had his abdominoplasty, augmentation, mastopexy, maybe some liposuctioning. Which end of the sex can she be on? Is she going to, are we going to say, you know, you can have normal sex or maybe you're just receiving, laying down? I mean, these are things I think that patients probably need to know and the kind of what's going to be okay, what's not.
Well, I think from a time frame perspective, they're definitely going to be on the later end of that, right? They're not going to be 2 to 3 weeks. It's going to end up being 4 to 6 weeks and beyond. And part of it is, all right, if you're going to be on the receiving downward end, that you ultimately need to wait longer because you're going to end up having pressure sitting on top of you into the areas where you've operated on. And if it's going to be in any other position, it may be kind of sooner. But again, it's all about listening to your body. I would say from a tummy tuck liposuction perspective, you're probably around that, you know, 4 to 6 week mark before you can resume that normal activity back to where you feel up to doing it. Again, first week, 2 weeks, you're in this initial phase. You want things to heal. You shouldn't be doing a whole lot. You can start doing some minor stuff. And then you know, around 4 to 6 weeks is when you can resume normal-ish behavior.
Yeah. And I think you're right. And I think, and it's almost like it's a graduate. It's like when we tell them to go back to working out. So like, you know, working out, hitting the gym, we usually say around a month-ish time, but that doesn't mean you go boom, you know, your heaviest you've ever gone or most intense CrossFit workout. Same thing with sex. It's like slow and easy, just careful.
You said it a second ago, listen to your body, right? If it hurts or if it's not, you know, it doesn't feel good or something's not right, don't do it. If it feels okay and there's no issues, go right ahead.
Yep. And then there's certain times where there's certain things like a labiaplasty. You're going to have to wait 2 months for that. We just have to just be really careful and cautious.
Can they screw it up, G, if they do stuff too soon? Right. Totally. This is the original topic, right?
They can. You really can. You know, the thing is likely get away with it, but we've seen what happens. And even like something as small as like a guy getting something like a submental liposuction, like just a neck liposuction or a little neck lift, you know, having intercourse really early, like the same day or the day of, or the next day, blood pressure gets real high, heart rate gets real high and gets a hematoma, you know, and it just, so stuff can happen. So you just got to let yourself take a break from it. You know, we know how important it is to everybody. You know, it's an important thing for our existence, but hold off for a bit because it's probably to your advantage just to let yourself recuperate, but you will get back to it. And I think be really careful about it just because we've seen some interesting stuff happen afterwards.
All right. So lesson number one, follow your post-op instructions. And if you don't know, ask. So that's number one, how you can screw things up. Let's talk about another one. What's one of the most common things that we see that patients end up either screwing up or ruining their results?
You know, the most important thing is not taking care of themselves. It's the most important thing. And what I mean by that is just the general overall lifestyle, dietary habits, and, you know, making this huge investment and then not continuing it, not at bare minimum, maintaining where they were at the time of the procedure, or which I think is the way they need to approach this, is that you make this huge investment. You work so hard to get to where you're getting. You literally work hard for that money that you're paying for this, and then essentially walk away from it and revert back or revert to, into a lifestyle that's even less healthy. It stinks when that happens because everything kind of goes south. So I think that's probably, to me, the biggest one.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to see a patient that you've done what you think is really good surgery, you got a great tummy tuck, really good liposuction, and they come back 4 or 5 months later and you're like, oh my goodness, you gained weight. And we can tell right away. And it's not, you know, let's just take liposuction for instance, right? Let's just say we do liposuction in the abdomen and, you know, we end up taking 3 pounds off, a couple inches off their waist, and it's a female patient, they come back in, they gain weight. They're not going to necessarily gain it in the area that we did the liposuction, but they're going to gain it elsewhere. They become disproportionate. Their breasts are going to be larger. Their arms are going to be bigger. Their thighs are going to be a little bit bigger. So you have to be very careful of that because then it ends up screwing up their results.
No doubt. They almost take on this look that is so odd. And here's the thing. And I think patients are like, well, that's why I got the surgery. Well, the reality check is that number one, if you gain 50 pounds, regardless, you're going to take on a look that you're not going to like. The second is that if you, like you're saying, Bill, you preferentially remove, let's say you got 10 fat cells everywhere. You remove 8 of those fat cells in the tummy area, and then everywhere else you have 10, right? And so you gain 50 pounds. Well, your body needs to store that energy somewhere, and it's going to store in all the fat cells. So that tummy area, there's only 2, but everywhere else there's 10. So you think about it, all that other area is going to get bigger. And then people start understanding this. So part of this is like just knowing that bare minimum, just at least stay where you are when we started the procedure. If you can just do that, you're going to be okay.
Maintenance is key. And this is what we tell everybody for body contouring. Maintain. It helps.
Yep.
If guys were to gain weight, you did, you know, the reverse. You have a male patient. You did abdominal liposuction. They gain weight. Where do they gain?
You know, the guy, it's funny, the guys take on a paradoxical shape. Their tummy's going to get big, round. It'll look like they got a pot belly because they're going to start depositing all their fat around their organs. That's called visceral fat. And that's dangerous fat anyway. So again, it's this simple concept of like, you have to, you know, maintain. And if anything, go down you have to even do more for yourself to provide yourself with the best overall lifestyle and state of wellness. And simply put, that's the most important thing. So this is like, body contouring is not a weight loss solution at all. Body contouring is what it is, body contouring. And it combined with the lifestyle modifications and improvements, it's a freaking slam dunk. It's the best. The success stories are insane. The results are they're just incredible. And like, you and I both have them. If you were looking like at our before afters, our IGs, the patients who have had a really technically great procedures by you and I, plus who have taken care of themselves and dialed it up, those are the freaking smoke shows. And it's insane. And that we tell it to our patients, 70% of it is on us as your providers, as your organization that, you know, you come to see for your aesthetic needs, but 30% of it is on you and stays on you. And that's important because it's not only just to look good, like this is legit to feel good, to be healthy, to not have issues that could potentially happen to you that could be a potentially life altering or life ending.
That's why I'm saying it's a two-way street. We are a team with that patient, right? We're going to do our part. We expect them to do their part. And it's this agreement that we have with each other so that they can have a result that they're going to be happy with long term. And if they go out and gain 15, 20 pounds, 25 pounds, we're not going to be mad at you, but it's just upsetting to see for you because we want the best for you. And if you screw that up, it's like, oh my God, we did all this work. You went through all this recovery and I know you're not happy with where you're at.
Yeah. And like, it hurts us too. And so I think patients or someone listening may say, well, what do you do when that happens? What should be done? And I think we would want to intercept that fast. And I think we would want patients or listeners to come to us to have that conversation because we have infrastructure or processes in place to help with that. There's all kinds of ways to deal with this, whether it comes to lifestyle, dietary recommendations, or pharmacologic therapies, or even surgical intervention. So there are ways to handle this. How about pivoting to something else? What's something else that patients could potentially do wrong or screw up? What about compression garments? How important are compression garments? What's your outlook on this? When is it important? When is it not? Does it cause problems?
Heck yeah. It goes back to your original point. We need to follow instructions, right? The instructions are there for a reason. Compression garments are there for a reason. And the point of that is we don't want fluid accumulation in areas that we don't want it. And that's what the compression garments help to do, is they help compress the tissues so that not only does your recovery be a little bit faster because you limit the edema that's there, but you also prevent open space where you could potentially get what we refer to as a seroma, which is that open fluid pocket that you get, which fluid is dangerous, it's complicated, and it creates long-term issues.
No doubt. And then the other thing is going to be is, so going back to this following directions, compression garments are great. Now, I have some patients who go overboard on this, especially my ladies who ascribe to, you know, a lot of the South American recommendations about wearing fajas and other kind of garments that are freaking, they're wonderful, but there's certain ways in how you use compression garments, and that's super important. So when a compression garment's applied, if it's applied too aggressively, too tight, it can actually cause sheer injury. It can burn the skin. We've seen some horrendous complications. Luckily, not ours, but we've seen these. So compression garments can be dangerous, so you need to apply that appropriately. What does appropriate mean? It basically means that when you put that garment on, it should be applying some light level of compression so that you can feel a sense of compression, but not feel a sense of almost like asphyxiation or like so tight that if it's around your hand, that your hand's going numb. The other thing is going to be compression garments have to be removed and replaced numerous times in the day. You don't just leave it on all day long. Why is that, Bill? Why wouldn't you leave a compression garment on all day long? What are issues?
You need to assess the tissues. In the end, you mentioned it, right? You can actually burn the skin. You can actually create these abrasions, these skin marks, and you need to be able to see things and make sure that is A-okay and that there's not a problem that's occurring. Plus, you want to shower. You know, hygiene is super important. You want to prevent infection. You want to prevent yeast infection. So you take everything off, you shower appropriately and put them back on. It is not a one time, you leave it on for weeks and then take it off.
Yep. And the other thing is you want to look for seams, you want to look for creases. You have to make sure the skin looks good. And then you want to change garments. Like patients say, well, which garment should I get? I was like, listen, this is going to be your starter. And then you are going to get like 10 different garments. I bet you are going to. And you're going to get stuff from Mirena. You're going to get stuff from Design Veronique. You're going to get stuff from Amazon. You're going to get stuff from Spanx. This is a process. And you're going to continually reduce what you're going to wear. And then you might switch into like a big a shaping garment, like a faja. And, you know, you're going to wear this for a long time. Our recommendation is like 2 months afterwards, but there's plenty of people who wear them for months afterwards. You know, the South Americans wear them for 6 months. Some people continue to wear them all the time.
It's like your security blanket after body contouring. And you get used to it, you like it, and then you kind of feel weird when you're not wearing it. But again, as long as you wear it appropriately, and this is spot on for your G-speak, by the way. It's like you want it tight, but not too tight. You want it snug, but loose.
Firm, but gentle pressure. My wife would get a kick out of that one.
This is going to be right up your alley for G-speak. Tight, but not too tight.
What about taking medicines and taking too much, too little, going back on their other stuff? What do you tell patients about actual medicines and supplements?
Well, I mean, it's one of these things where if you need it for medical reasons, we go back on it, you know, the next day. If we have you on antibiotic, take it because it's appropriate. If we have you on, you know, blood thinner, you need to ultimately take it. All your other supplements, you know, you want to wait a few weeks before you get into that. It's just the way it is, right? You want to create a problem that's not there. You don't want to create bleeding episodes, and that's what can ultimately happen.
Yeah. And the most important thing is communication. Like if you're on something like a benzodiazepine for anxiety and you need that and you don't start taking that, you could have a real issue. So a lot of this is communication. So, you know, if there's a question, you need to let us know, let your providers know, let the preoperative team know, because at the end of the day, we need you to make sure to take everything you're going to need. And if there's some medicines that you're dependent on, then you need to restart those. Sometimes these other medicines are quote unquote potentially dangerous because of a bleeding potential issue. Sometimes there can be a drug interaction issue. So the way you handle this is ask, ask, ask. But it's not something you absolutely need. Just hold off, because we usually probably about the latest is 2 weeks time when we let you get back to everything. A lot of our patients are on hormone supplements also. And they've after a big, massive body contouring procedure, the fear about hormone supplements is that potential increased risk of like blood clots. So again, ask. Typically, we want to wait a little bit of time. Some people can't do without it. And if they need to go back on it sooner, that's fine. Sometimes we get concerned we might have somebody sign a kind of a waiver just to kind of release some of the liability. Because at the end of the day, we don't want you to be miserable. We want you to be happy. We don't want you to have hot flashes and all these other issues. But at the same time, we don't want to have a more dangerous issue.
The medication thing is pretty unique and specific, and just really talk through with your provider on each one. And you know, that's why we do a pre-op visit, because we say, okay, take this one, don't take this one, hold off this one, continue to take this one, because everyone is super specific.
I was thinking about one thing is like one thing you can screw up. Don't keep shit from your providers. Never hold back anything that's related to your health. Like it just, please share it all, because if you surprise us with something and it could cause an issue, it's not a personal thing. We just don't want anything negative or dangerous to happen to you or even slightly bad to happen to you. And just if you don't divulge all of the important past medical history or habits that you have, something could get screwy or iffy, or you get there on your day of surgery and we're like, oh my God, we can't do this case. And Bill, you and me, our entire team, all of our surgeons, all the providers, like we never want to cancel a procedure. But if someone has an issue or someone has crazy high blood pressure or someone has, you know, is on like an active blood thinner or something and they just didn't disclose it, that's silly. So don't be shy about disclosing everything there is to know about your medical history and your lifestyle and your habits, because it's important.
Tell us everything. The more you tell us, the better it is. One of the ones I see a lot that's a common complication that can ruin things is smoking.
Mm-hmm. And talk more about smoking. We're not just talking about nicotine or cigs or vaping nicotine. We're talking about any kind of combustible product, right?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Nicotine in general, smoking tobacco inhibits the blood flow of tissues. And so it can really compromise the healing process. And the last thing you want when you're smoking, especially in the recovery process, is to have a wound, something that doesn't heal right, because it ends up leaving a terrible scar, open wounds. You have to have dressing changes, packing, all that stuff. It leads to a very unfavorable outcome.
Yeah. And I think you're totally right on that. And the most important thing I want to tell those patients who might be smokers or dependent on some of those products, we've taken care of many patients who are in the same situation, but they have been able to come off of it. We want people to be typically off of those things for about 4 to 6 weeks. And just to be as safe as possible, there are certain situations where certain interventions are not as high risk and they can they're on their own volition select that they're not going to do that. And we have to make them sign a waiver kind of explaining that they are making that decision. But I still don't recommend that. It's one of those things where why would you do anything that could potentially increase your risk by 5X of having an issue? So that's our logic.
So not only does smoking cause the healing problem, which is a pretty big deal in plastic surgery, but the other thing is it can cause respiratory symptoms. I mean, a lot of these surgeries we do are under general anesthesia. You're getting an anesthetic. We're having to supplement your breathing, sometimes with a machine, sometimes hand-assisted. But if you have a long smoking history, your lungs don't have what we term in our world compliance like it used to. And because of that, it doesn't function like somebody who's not smoked. So your chances of getting a pneumonia are much higher than those who do not. So it becomes very imperative in those cases that you ultimately need to follow the instructions in terms of what we term your respiratory treatment or your respiratory therapy after surgery in those cases.
It's an interesting thing. And this is something that I would say is important from a standpoint of what to do, what not to do. Most important thing, like we said earlier, is I think most important is communication. You're not sure, you better ask. And the other is follow instructions. And just because you're feeling really good doesn't mean you can do it. And I think that's probably the biggest thing. And make your follow-up appointments, even the ones that seem a little frivolous or annoying, because every once in a while you have actually might have an issue that you have no clue about. And we see, we're like, hey, whoa, we need to see that. I need to, let me look at that right there. Or I need to trim that, or I need to remove that. And we catch those things that the untrained eye wouldn't have seen. And so I think that's a really important piece of information. So don't miss your visits. Don't miss your follow-ups. And the other thing is, if you're not happy with something, don't think that you can't come see us, because actually we do want to know. And we want to make sure that everything is how it's supposed to be. Sometimes there are some people that might be thinking that they can't approach their provider because of that. And that is simply not the case and should not be the case. All right. Thanks, everybody. We really enjoy chatting with you. And the other thing I would follow up with that is we definitely want to make this more interactive from a standpoint of making sure that we're addressing topics that are going to be of high value to our listeners. So please let us know any specific things that we need to focus in on. Thank you, everybody.
Links to learn more about anything mentioned on today's show are available in the show notes. To learn more about Dr. Bill Cortesis and Dr. Gaurav Bahardi and the entire team of HKB Cosmetic Surgery, just go to hkbsurgery.com or follow HKB on Instagram at HKB Cosmetic Surgery. Subscribe to our newsletter for key takeaways from each episode, links to any resources we discuss, and promo codes or giveaways from HKB and our partners. If this show has helped you in any way, if you learned something, write a review on Apple Podcasts and share the podcast with a friend. Take a screenshot of this podcast episode with your phone and show it at your consultation or appointment, or mention the promo code PODCAST to receive $25 off any service or product of $50 or more. It's Complicated is a production of The Axis, THEAXIS.io.